So today I would like to start with just learning how to deal with the free Fermi in two dimensions. Okay. This is almost as easy as dealing with the free boson, but there are a couple of interesting subtleties that is important to take into account. Now, usually when you write the action for a Fermi in some number of dimensions, you need to use gamma matrices, spinor indices, and all of that. In two dimensions, for a free Fermi, you can sort of get rid of all of that by just picking a very useful basis for the gamma matrices and then forgetting about them. So the action for a So the equation of motion for a free fermion can just be written like this. In other words, there is a way to package your two-dimensional spinner into a vector, into a two-component vector, such that the Dirac operator sort of is off diagonal. So in particular, that means that psi is an holomorphic object, and psi bar is an anthropomorphic object. They're going to behave somewhat in a somewhat similar way as the derivatives of a free scalar. Somewhat similar, not quite the same. In particular, if you look at how the spinors transform under rotations. So if you remember, spinors are roughly the square roots of vectors. This is a vector. If you do a change of coordinates, it transforms by the Jacobian, the holomorphic Jacobian, and the anthropomorphic derivative transforms by the anthropomorphic Jacobian. And if you remember, we interpret this sort of formula as saying that this is an operator with conformal dimensions 1, 0. So we define the, in general, for an operator, we define some conformal dimensions, which were eigenvalues of L0 in the state operator map, such that so for a general operator, if you do a conformal transformation, holomorphic order transformation, you get powers on the Jacobian, which are controlled by these two numbers, delta and delta bar. You could say that this is an operator of dimension of types delta, delta bar. So delta x, del x is of type 1, 0, and del bar x is of type 1, 0, 1. But the fermions want to be the square root of a vector. And you can imagine that they'll transform with some power 1/2. For a free boson, the stress tensor, which is trying to transform as a 2,0 object is written as follows. For a free fermion, is written roughly like this, up to signs, which I, of course, did not write down in the note. Okay. So you see here, you put together two objects with weights 1,0, and you get something that roughly has weights 2,0, up to the effects of normal ordering, which messed it up a little and give you a certain wall anomaly. For free fermion, you put together something of weight 1/2 and something of weight 3/2, to get something of weight 2, and again, up to normal ordering issues, which will give you a conformal anomaly. So the anomaly for a boson was normalized to be 1. The anomaly for a fermion happens to be 1/2. Now, this might make you wonder if you can make a boson out of two fermions. And this is more or less true. But it's a story we will not need here. Now, the presence of the square root has pretty dramatic consequences, in the sense that it means that the sign of psi will behave in a funny way. For example, if you look at the state operator map, right? Usually we wrote things like this. When mapping operators on the cylinder to the plane, we got some interesting exponential of S, or the coordinate on the cylinder. If I try to do the same thing for a fermion, I get something like that. And now something. This is a funny function because it's not periodic on the cylinder. Essentially, that means that if you're considering a configuration, if you're writing your state operator map and you want to describe a situation where you have just the identity at the origin, if you put a fermion in the presence of the identity, you don't expect it to have any strange behavior. In particular, if I bring it around the identity, I surely don't expect it to change sign. But that means that on the cylinder, my fermion will have to change sign as it goes around. Okay. So when I write my state operator map, operators like the identity get mapped into states in what's called the NS sector, the Hirschhorst sector, which is a sector on the cylinder where the fermion is antiperiodic. Conversely, if I try to discuss a state in what's called the Ramon sector, where psi of sigma plus 2 pi equal to psi of sigma, meaning the psi is periodic, the state operator map will send it to some peculiar operator at the origin, something that's called a twist field, with a property that if I bring psi around it, it changes sign. So this could be, if you are studying the path integral of free fermions on the surface, inserting a spin field essentially means that you're doing a path integral over configurations of these fermions, which are antiperiodic. Okay, so this is the main subtlety we need to deal with when we study fermions. that there are two sectors, Ramond and Evel Schwartz. Actually, because there is both a psi and a psi bar, in principle, you could think about states where psi is periodic and psi bar is antiperiodic. So now, if you try to define a quantum field theory, you cannot keep all of these states and all of these operators. For example, it would be unreasonable in a quantum theory to keep both the fermion operator and the twist field. Because in the defining correlation function, I want it to be a function of the position of the operators, not something that has funny monotomies as I bring the operators around. Now, there are ways to enhance the concept of the basic ideas of quantum field theory to allow these things to happen. But if I'm just trying to describe a vanilla quantum field theory, this should not happen. Now you could say, okay, fine. I just keep psi, psi bar, psi psi bar, and only the states in the Neville-Schwartz sector. That should be fine. That's a fine choice on the plane or on the sphere, but it gets you in trouble on the torus and on Heiger-Jenius Riemann surfaces. Essentially, the problem is that if I look at the torus, I can look at it as a cylinder in many different ways. This is the worst torus ever drawn. Sorry, let me try again. Okay. Does this look like a donut? Good. Now I can cut this donut in many ways that make it look like a cylinder. I can cut it like this. So here I'll see some states going around the torus in this direction. And I would want them to be in a virtual state, so antiperiodic boundary conditions. But I could also cut it like this. Now I would see states that are antiperiodic in this direction. But I can also cut it like this. Turns out that all these ways of cutting it are conformally equivalent, meaning you can do a wild transformation which relates them, diffeomorphism, and wild transformation which relates them. Now this, it's kind of funny, but you should imagine it as sort of an average of the cutting this way and cutting this way. So if you ask what happens as a fermion goes around this cylinder, well, what happens to it is that it's like going this way and then this way. It's probably easier if I draw it on the, if I open up the torus. So one way of cutting, we're asking what happens to the fermion when it goes around the torus this way. So I open up the torus, this side is identified with this, and this is identified with this. So I can ask what happens to the fermion when I go around this way. And I say, oh, I want it to be antiperiodic. And then I ask what happens when I go around this way. And I can say, oh, I want it to be antiperiodic. Except that then if I go this way and then this way, it ends up being periodic. Which means that if I had cut my torus along this direction, I would have found a periodic fermion. So just by cutting the torus in many different possible ways into an open cylinder, I have discovered there is no way to make sure that in all those ways, for all those choices, the fermion remains antiperiodic. There are essentially three choices, and if two of them are periodic, the third one is antiperiodic. If two are antiperiodic, the third one is periodic. Which means I cannot just limit myself to psi and ignore sigma. Okay. So I need to do other choices. Now, one choice which turns out to work for a single fermion, is called the Ising model, tells you to keep sigma. Actually, there happens to be two states in the Ramon sector. We'll see it momentarily, two ground states, which correspond to two operators which could call sigma and mu. But with a property that if you bring psi to sigma, you get mu, and if you bring psi to mu, you get sigma. Anyway, so I can say, okay, let me try keeping sigma. Okay. If I keep sigma, I cannot keep psi. I can keep the identity, of course. I can keep psi, psi bar, because both psi and psi bar are antiperiodic around sigma. So psi, psi bar is single valued. I can keep psi, the psi. That's also single valued when I bring it around sigma. I can essentially keep everything that involves a given number of fermions. So I can definitely allow myself to put these guys in correlation functions. But it turns out that mu and sigma are not mutually local. If you bring mu around sigma, you get a minus sign again. So you keep sigma. Here we killed, we threw away psi, we threw away psi bar. Here we're going to throw away mu. We're going to keep other stuff, which I'll describe momentarily. So this is what's called the GSO projection. There is a quantum number, essentially the fermion number, which assigns fermion number 0 to the entity, 1 to psi, 1 to psi bar. I'm writing the game value of the Fermi number for various operators. So for the identity, I get Fermi number, again value 1. For psi, I get minus 1. For psi bar, I get minus 1. For psi, psi bar, I get 1, etc. For sigma, I say that it's 1. Then for mu, is minus 1, etc. And I only keep the operators which have minus 1 to the f equal to 1. So I have one as a thing. I have this guy, which is sometimes called epsilon. I have sigma. And some other things. Everything else can be actually, well, this, I have the stress tensor. And everything else can essentially be made out of these and the stress tensor. I don't know if you've encountered the Ising model in statistical mechanics, right? Something with Hamiltonian. Something defined on some graph like the square lattice with spins at each vertex of the lattice and interactions on the edges. Right, you remember there is a critical energy, a critical temperature at which there is a phase transition. And if you sit at the temperature and you look at very far, large distances, you find a conformal field theory. You find a violin invariant theory, which is essentially the theory of a free fermion. I mean, the Ising model is equivalent roughly to free fermions on the lattice, but with this sort of projection. So, for example, if you take an operator defined by averaging spins at some location, that becomes sigma in the continuum limit. If you take the energy operator, that becomes epsilon in the continuum limit. But it's very tricky to make an operator that looks like psi. You cannot make it with some local combination of spins on your lattice. I invite you to try to make an operator that looks like psi, something that is somehow antiperiodic, has antiperiodic boundary conditions around sigma. It's possible because the ASI model is equivalent to a theory of free fermions, but it's very non-local. It's not a local operator on your lattice.
Could you remind us what
it's another non-local operator. Actually, if you remember, there is Kramer-Vanier duality at the high temperature, low temperature duality. So you can ask, if I take the spin operator at low temperature and I map it under the duality to the high temperature phase, what do I get? You get something very non-local, which is mu. And I'd be happy to actually give some details after the lecture, but it's not quite germane for the purpose of the lecture itself. But it's a lot of fun. It might also remind you of some of the things you've seen with the toric code or topological phases of matter. Okay. Anyway, go back to the fermions. So for a single fermion, this is more or less the only local quantum field theory choice you can make. If you have multiple fermions, you get a little bit more choices, especially if your number of fermions is just right. And in string theory, of course, the number of fermions would be just right to make some interesting choices. Okay. Now, let me try to put a bit more meat on this, describe in detail the space of states of a free fermion on a cylinder. As usual, I will just focus for now on the holomorphic half of the free fermion. So I have two choices, Nevel-Schwarz and Ramond. So for Nevel-Schwarz, when I expand my fermion on the cylinder, I had to put half integral powers of E to the S. So that I'll put an index here that is also half integral. I have my usual anti-commutator relations. So I have a vacuum with a property that is killed by all positive modes. And then I can build out of the vacuum with the negative modes. For example, psi minus 1/2 acting on the vacuum. Now I cannot do psi minus 1/2 squared because that's zero. I can do psi minus 1/2, psi minus 3/2 on the vacuum. Or I can do psi minus 3/2 on the vacuum, et cetera, et cetera. So as you can imagine, under the state operator map, this goes to the identity. This goes to something of dimension 1/2, which is just psi itself. This goes to the stress tensor, because it has dimension 2. This one goes to the psi, et cetera, et cetera. Now, on the Ramond side, I do the same expansion, but now I have integer powers. I write the same commutational relations. But then there is a crucial difference. There is a zero mode. So in the case of the free boson, we had X as it was a zero mode, and then there was P conjugate to it. Here now I have a psi zero with psi 0 squared equal to 1. It's actually a bit tricky to, So I can get some ground state, we call it sigma, but then psi 0 acting on it will give me some other ground state, and we call it mu, and vice versa. Actually, here is a moment in which it's useful to remember that we have both holomorphic and anti-holomorphic fermions. But let me just ignore it. Now, to the sigma, we can build things. For example, we could put psi minus 1 acting on sigma, psi minus 2 acting on sigma, psi minus 1, psi minus 2 acting on sigma, etc. So under the state of Peirce map, they become operators, which are not exactly easy to label. They're just relatives of sigma. But actually, a lot of them can be described just as derivatives of sigma or descendants of sigma, meaning things that you obtain from sigma by acting with the stress tensor. But no matter. For our purposes of studying the massless superstring spectrum, we just need to care about sigma, actually. All the rest would be massive string states, which you can ignore. Right, a little aside, that so if you include both holomorphic and anti-holomorphic, then you can put, you'll have sigma, and both psi and psi bar will send you to mu and back. So, typically when you, okay. And you can adjust things so that psi zero squared equal to 1, psi zero bar squared equal to 1, and psi zero bar anti-commute. It requires some phases, for example, you can say that psi zero sends sigma to e to the I pi over 4. No, sorry, was it I? Just I, probably. Anyway, there are some phases that you can put inside these equations to make this work. But much like it happens for gamma matrices, right, as you remember, zero modes of fermions behave like gamma matrices. But as it happens with gamma matrices, you can write formulas with gamma matrices which are more or less uniform in the number of dimensions, in the number of fermionic zero modes you have. But writing down the actual gamma matrices or figuring out what is the dimension of the gamma matrices is something that is very dependent on the dimension you live in. Similarly, when you try to describe a certain number of fermions, you need to quantize all the zero modes and this figure out the size of the vectors or the space of ground states and how the fermions act on it a bit case by case. So this is probably a good time to go from one fermion to the correct number of fermions for string theory. Perhaps I'll just write another couple of formulas. So from this, you can write down the stress tensor, the Virasoro generators, in terms of the free fermions, very easily. There is another theory which has both a free boson and a free fermion. there is something else you can write down which is very useful, which is the supercurrent, which is just psi dx. Okay. So the Virasoro generators are generators of vector fields, correspond to vector fields, are generators of coordinate transformations, holomorphic coordinate transformations. The modes of these are generators of super diffeomorphisms, super coordinate transformations. So they generate transformations which map x to psi and psi to x. I mean, you can see just very explicitly, right? If I want to write Gn plus 1/2, for example, in the NS sector, I just get something like sum over psi k plus 1/2 a n minus k. So what's going to happen when G commutes with a, for example? The a inside G will commute with a, and I'll be left with some psi. Conversely, if I do an anticommutator of G with some psi, it catches the other psi and spits out an a. So I leave it as an exercise to figure out how Gn plus 1/2, say, acts on the boson itself, or how G acts on the fermion itself, on the fermion field. You should recover the action of the super diffeomorphisms, which you saw yesterday. For today's lecture, these modes are useful because the conditions for BRST invariance of states, the condition for states to be closed and not exact, can be expressed in terms of these generators and the Virasoro generators. Okay, so we can move to string theory. So now we have 10 scalars, 10 fermions of both chiralities, of both left moving, right moving, and then, of course, ghosts. I'm going to ignore the ghosts as much as I can. The only thing that I cannot completely ignore is the fact that the same way as fermions have Ramondan and S sectors, the ghosts also will be affected by the choice, simply because the BRST generator relates beta and G, which means if my fermions are in the NS sector, G is also periodic, antiperiodic, and so beta will have to be antiperiodic for things to be compatible with BRST symmetry. And similarly, if I'm in the Ramon sector, psi is periodic, beta will also have to be periodic. So in the Nevel-Schwartz sector, there will be some vacuum, which is the one mapped by the state operator mapped to the identity. In the Ramon sector, there will be some guy which is built out of the spin fields for the fermions and also for the beta and gammas. So it's some guy that has to be an interesting action, both of the zero modes of the fermions and the zero modes of beta and gamma. And, okay. Now, I just call this the Ramon vacuum, but one thing that is important to remember is that the choice of Nevel-Schwartz Ramon affects like the Casimir energy, the energy of the states, or the dimension of the fields. I did not mention here mention it here. I should have, or here. So you can use this definition of the stress tensor to define L0 and to compute the L0 eigenvalues of all of these states. So as you can expect, this guy has dimension zero, has an eigenvalue zero for zero, because it's related to the identity. If you compute the dimension of these guys, you actually find 1/16, which is rather bizarre. It's 1/16. Luckily, the anthropomorphic dimension of sigma is also 1/16. So at least you get the power of the absolute value of the Jacobian when you do coordinate transformations. Otherwise, you would have to worry about worse things than the square roots. And indeed, it was a beautiful discovery, the fact that in the Ising model, the spin operator gets a very funny anomalous dimension of 1/16. Okay, so in here, the Ramon ground state will get a contribution of, will have an energy, a Casimir energy, which has a contribution from all the fermions and from the beta and gammas. And some magic happens, and at the end of the story, the overall dimension is precisely such that the sort of condition for a state to be on shell is such that now A is zero here. So A for Ramon, in the Ramon sector, A turns out to be zero. There is a beautiful cancellation between the Casimir energies of bosons and fermions. While in the next sector, is 1/2. So if you remember this, so in the bosonic string, we had A equal to 1. So the Casimir energy of the ghosts and the just was a result of a calculation using involving the BRST operator. But roughly this array arose from the Casimir energy of the scalar fields, roughly. This comes from a contribution of the Casimir energy of the scalar fields and fermions. And this arises from the beautiful cancellation between the Casimir energy of fermions and bosons. In a sense, this cancellation is possible because in the Ramon sector, the fermions have the same periodicity as the bosons. Okay. In the Ramon sector, there is a mode of the supercurrent, G0, which is just a supersymmetry. It's a super, sort of super translation. Anyway, does not matter. Just result of a calculation, doesn't matter where it comes from, we're gonna use it today. Now, in the Ramon sector, in particular, I need to quantize the zero modes of my fermions. Both holomorphic and anti-holomorphic. So essentially, I get a set of 10 gamma matrices, and then another independent set of 10 gamma matrices. So if I just focus on the holomorphic part for now, I need to put here some spinor indices for the Lorentz, the 10-dimensional Lorentz symmetry. Uh, There is a nice representation of gamma matrices in 10 dimensions, which is Majorana and Weyl. So it is as small as possible. Actually, there are two different possible representations. One chiral and the other, one with positive chirality and one with negative chirality. And the gamma matrices, or the zeromorphs of the fermions, map the chiralities into each other. Okay. So I don't know how much have you seen. Well, probably haven't seen many gamma matrices in dimensions different from four, but in four dimensions, if you remember, a Dirac spinner can be decomposed into two chiralities. And the gamma matrices map one chirality into the other. So there is in four dimensions, you say gamma matrices, gamma zero, gamma one, gamma two, gamma three. And you can make their product gamma five. Which anti-commutes with them. And you can decompose your spinners into positive and negative chirality spinners. And then your gamma matrices send spinors of one chirality to spinors of the other chirality, and vice versa, because they anti-commute with gamma 5. Now, in a similar way, when you're in 10 dimensions, you can take the product of all the 10 gamma matrices, and it gives you a gamma 11 that anti-commutes with them. And then you can define some representation where gamma, where there are two sets of states, positive and negative and values for gamma 11. And the gamma matrices map one into the other. On the other hand, the Lorentz transformations are made out of two gamma matrices. So the gamma matrices map one into the other, but the Lorentz generators map each chirality into itself. So these are two irreducible representations of the Lorentz group. But if you want to look at the algebra of gamma matrices, you need to combine them. So in the same way, here there are two different representations of the Lorentz group in 10 dimensions, which are mapped into each other by these gamma matrices. Okay, so now we are ready to compute some spectra of superstrings. But let me stress, right, so this is something that can happen on Dolo. This happens from quantizing Dolomorphic twice, and then something like this happens again when you quantize the anti-Lomorphic twice. So in principle, we should be ready to study four different sectors. Depending on what we do with the left movers, with the Lomorphic fermions, and what we do with the anti-Lomorphic fermions. Now, like in the ASI model, we won't be able to really include all of the states inside the correlation functions, inside the theory. So I'm going to write down all possible states, but then we need to figure out how to select a subset which is mutually local. A subset of states which correspond to local operators on the Riemann surface, which have no monotonies and are bringing around each other. Because otherwise correlation functions don't make sense. And I cannot integrate them over the space of configuration of points because they're not single valued. Right? When we do correlation, when you compute string theory scattering amplitudes, we take a bunch of operator insertions which represent the external states and then integrate over the complex structure of the Riemann surface, in particular the positions of the points. If the correlation functions are not single valued, it's not going to work out. So here, we start with a vacuum, possibly momentum from the scalars, zero mods. I look over there, L0 minus minus A equal to zero. So this gives me a tachyon. Like in the bosonic string. Then I can start acting on the vacuum with fermions. These guys have dimension 1/2. So each of them is sufficient to pay this price. And I get a massless mode, which is space-time indices. Yeah, my graviton, my B field, my dilaton, they are again here. The only difference is that they are made out of the psi's and not of the scalars acting on the vacuum. Scalars acting on the vacuum are going to give me massive string modes. Then I can look, say, in this sector. In this sector, I have the states of different chiralities that come out of quantizing the right movers. Maybe I should put a little bar here to remind myself that these indices are acted upon by the psi zero bar, zero modes. Well, these ones essentially have dimension 1/2. So we need to put something with dimension 1/2 on the left hand side as well. There's always a constraint that sort of L zero has to equal to L zero bar. So I need to dress them let me say it properly. So on the right hand side I need L zero bar equal to zero because it's Ramon. So it gives me P square equal to zero. But if P square is equal to zero to make things work on the holomorphic side, where L zero has to be equal to 1/2, I need to also put an holomorphic mode here. So what is this? It's some field which has a spinor index and a vector index. This is a spin tree half field. It's going to be a gravitino. It's also massless. And then there will be massive modes. I do the same on this sector. On this sector, I need to act with psi bar mu over A or A bar. So A dot. And finally, in the Ramon sector, I have
objects which have two spinor indices of various possible chiralities. Okay. All of these guys are going to have p squared equal to zero. So I find the large amount of massless stuff and the tachyon. For the tachyon, graviton, B-field, dilaton, gravitinos, and stuff with two spinor indices. Now, when I have two spinor indices, you can always convert them into a bunch of vector indices by using gamma matrices. So I could, so I'll get back to it in a moment. Now, at this point, I need to impose a constraint to make sure that these states correspond to mutually local operators. So I need to define a fermion number and keep only states of even fermion number. And here is where, so my fermion number operator, for things to make sense, should be commuting with the supercharge, with the BRC charge. Otherwise, I won't be able to use BRST symmetry. And when you go through the motion, so much as it happened for the correlation between periodicity of beta and periodicity of the fermions, there is a correlation between the definition of fermion number for the fermions and the definition of fermion number for beta. Essentially, inside the supercharge, if you want, so G is made out of psi, right? Psi has odd fermion number, that means G has odd fermion number, which means beta will have to have odd fermion number. And now, when you look at the Ramon sector, this has to have an action of the zero modes of beta and gamma. When the zero modes carry some quantum numbers, the things they act upon will have to also have quantum numbers. There is a complicated story with a very simple answer, final answer. The final answer is that this guy has odd fermion number. I mean, there is some arbitrary choices to make, but there is one consistent choice, which this guy has odd fermion number. And so it goes away. This guy, well, these guys have even fermion number. I'm going to define both a sort of a left Fermion number and a right Fermion number, one acting only on the psi's and one acting on the psi bars. This cannot always be done. Here, I had to define a Fermion number under which both psi and psi bars had odd Fermion number. There was no consistent way to get a theory with a Fermion number for which this was positive and this was negative. But if you have just the right amount of fermions, you can. Understanding why would require us to go into things like Torus correlation functions, which we are not going to do. But string theory has just the right amount of fermions so that you can actually define two different fermion numbers. So this guy, strictly speaking, has fermion number minus one, minus one. So if you were just throwing away things whose total Fermion number is odd, you would keep this. You would have a theory with tachyons, a string theory with tachyons, something called 0a or 0b, which would not be very interesting. But because we have available things like independent Fermion numbers for the holomorphic and anthropomorphic part, we can make more interesting choices where we only look at the left Fermion number, say. And so we are allowed to throw away this guy. We keep this guy. And then here, so here, right, the same way as, because the psi's map chiralities into each other, if the psi's have odd Fermion number, it means that the two chiralities must have different Fermion numbers. There is a bit of a freedom to decide who has which fermion number. Okay. So you get slightly different choices on who you keep and who you throw away here. For example, so there is two sources, type 2A and type 2B. In type 2A, you keep the gravitinos of a gravitino with left chirality and a gravitino with right chirality, throw away the other two. So, so we're gonna, in 2B, you keep gravitinos with the same chirality. So you throw away everything that has a dot. And then in the RR sector, depending on if you have type 2A or type 2B, you will keep some different choices of these. So these type 2A and type 2B superstrings have no tachyon. And they have gravitinos. The 0A and 0B have a tachyon, and they actually do not have the gravitinos. They both end up being thrown away. So the two things are sort of closely linked. To throw away a tachyon, you need to have supersymmetry in space-time, at least in this simple perturbative setup. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, there is another choice, which is something called heterotic string. In heterotic string, you do not put the psi bars. So in heterotic string, you have x's, you have psi's, no psi bars, and then, so you have B, C, B bar, C bar, beta, gamma, but no beta bar, gamma bar. And then you need to produce somehow another 16 worth of central charge. And the way you do it is that you add a bunch of right moving fermions with I goes from 1 to 32. And then when you look at the spectrum, you find interesting things. For example, it's a little bit, I don't think I have time to give it justice. But for example, you have situations where you might have a vector index coming from the left movers. And on the right hand side, you put a couple of lambdas. So you end up with fields which have a vector index and then an anti-symmetric index for this. And an anti-symmetric pair of indices from 1 to 32. And they end up looking like gauge fields for an SO32 gauge group. You find gravitinos, but half as many as we have here. Essentially because we only have these, but not these. So you get a tier with half as much supersymmetry as type 2A or type 2B. And with some extra funny gauge fields floating around. This is the heterotic strings. There are different choices of definitions of minus 1 to the f, on how the minus 1 to the f acts on these lambdas, and this ends up producing two different heterotic strings. One has a sort of the two gauge fields, and the other has E8 times E8 gauge fields. Now, in the very beginning, a heterotic string was considered much more interesting than type 3 or type 2b because it had gauge fields. And, you know, gauge fields are something useful if you want to describe the universe. Then people learned that they can make gauge fields in type 2a and type 2b with deep brains too, in a variety of other ways. And furthermore, they also learned that all of these string theories, type 2a, type 2b, heterotic, are all connected by webs of dualities. They're really just aspects of this, of the same object. Now, in the tomorrow's lecture, I think I want to spend a little bit of time just discussing supersymmetry, supergravity, and the spectrum in a little bit more detail. And perhaps the dualities that relate different string theories. I'm strongly tempted to discuss also things like torus partition functions, one-loop calculations, but I'm not sure there will be time. We'll see.